Broadway Baby, the podcast taking one casual theater goer to full out fangirl. I am your host, Kimberly Schmidt, here with my husband, Jay Schmidt.
Hi, guys.
And our baby, Alex Fasella.
Well, there's going to be a podcast.
Not to show off, but today we listen to Drowsy Chaperone.
The Drowsy Chaperone.
The Drowsy Chaperone.
That chaperone is so drowsy.
Not a drowsy chaperone.
Champagne makes me drowsy. Favorite. I love it so much. But first, did baby meet world?
Baby's met some world. First of all, because I'm on vacation, I've had time to work on my musical more. And it's been really nice doing it like first thing in the day. Like, it's my job. It's fun. And my biggest accomplishment was I finally cracked how to do my act two opener.
Ooh.
So the second act is going to open basically with Mel Gibson's character saying to his soldiers, like, we're only going to beat the British if we fight dirty, like we did in the actual war. So it's kind of like Mulan Be a Man, where it's almost like a power montage. And I thought, okay, this song is fun, but verse, chorus, verse, chorus, verse, chorus, he's just saying the same. Every verse and every chorus is basically saying, we're going to fight dirty, we're going to fight. It just was repetitive. So I thought, okay, what can I break this up and also use it to save time for dramatic purposes? And I thought, oh, what if in between I take out the middle verses and I replace them with what is the villain up to and make it kind of a parallel that their journeys are both ramping up in the same sort of feeling. And I thought, this is where I realize I'm a big fan of reprises, because when I have to write a new thing for a song to put something in a gap, the first thing I do is think of other songs that I've written that I could put in there and just change a little bit so that now it has a thematic flow. And also it's less work because I already wrote it.
Oh yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Cohesive piece of music.
Yeah. And so what I ended up doing was, because he's saying, go find the guy who fucked up all these soldiers, I put the melody from Heath Ledger's song about being off to war in there, but I moved it up from D to E and I sped it up, and it sounds really good. I'm very happy about it.
All right.
Two, now both the potential orchestrators have the song I wanted them to work on, and I can't wait to hear what they're gonna come up with. And if I might borrow a phrase from Godzilla, let them fight.
Yeah.
I was like, guys, I'm like, don't stress about it, but you are technically in competition with each other, but there's a third option. We might as well just basically form a band. So like, don't stress about it, but you are showing me what you can do and how you hear my material. So no one sent me a track yet, but they're both actually really excited about it. So that's cool. And finally, I'm going to say three words to you guys, and the first two will make entirely complete sense. The third one will not. Those three words are Randy Newman Faust. Have you listened to Randy Newman's Faust?
No.
He did his own version of Faust, and it is intermittently quite good and truly awful. It's baffling.
Like, recently he wrote this?
Like 2005.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was a modern retelling of Faust, but if you listen to the album without knowing that, you get none of that. There's no, like, it doesn't give you any clues. It's not sung through either, so it's not like you can actually follow the story. I've tried to find bootleg footage of it. They did it at Encores, because I don't think it even made it to anywhere big. And then it closed.
Mm-hmm.
And all the images I saw were like a guy in a backwards hat, like playing guitar aggressively. And I was like, oh no, it's like rock star. I want to be a rock star Faust. Oh, that's the most like hackneyed way you could take that. And it's, you know, it's so strange, because some songs are like kind of metal with that sort of, I like Randy Newman quite a bit. I think he's a great songwriter. And so when he pushes into that like more rock and roll, like the songs are shredding, it's really cool. And like, oh, a different kind of Randy Newman. But then it will abruptly change back to like, You've Got a Friend in Me, Randy Newman style.
Oh, that's Randy Newman.
I really
couldn't picture. I was thinking of Paul Newman, and I was very confused.
Yes.
Oh, the devil. I told the devil.
And I did
that song in my second grade talent show.
Oh.
Yeah, and with a lot of people what a lot of people who just know him from the Pixar songs don't know about Randy Newman is he has an incredibly like dark sensibility. So his lyrics, when he's not on the Disney clock, are fucked up. So imagine You've Got a Friend in Me, but it's about like dead kids, and that's actually one of the songs on this album. It's so baffling. I almost need you guys to hear it just so I don't feel like it's a fever dream I had. Like, I know it's real.
Maybe it is, but I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know.
You've been alone for some time.
I have.
You're just like making things up.
Yeah. You're making things up again, Alex.
Never, I was going to.
There is no Randy Newman Faust show. That's all my world.
Great.
Have we met world? Wow, we have not had an answer for this question in quite some time.
I have something to say.
Oh, fun!
Well, it is mostly just I've still met TikTok, but TikTok has met Bridgerton.
Okay. And
a la Ratatouille, there is a Bridgerton musical kicking around.
Oh.
All of it is wonderful.
Two things. One more world I forgot. I watched Ratatouille.
What did you think?
I loved it.
Yay!
I thought it was great. It was constrained by the medium it was in. But because literally there's nothing else to compare it to, it's almost, I'm like, well, you know, some of the book is iffy and like one of the songs isn't great. It's a little oversung, but it's mostly, I'm like, criticizing it at all almost seems like stupid. You should just like marvel it. Like it's a rose that grew out of frozen tundra.
That's exactly how to look at it. Yeah. It's just wow, this happened.
Yeah.
It's working on the street corner is what it is.
Yes.
Just like, well, how did you get here?
And I had a great time. I thought Andre DeShields being Ego the Critic is the best casting I've ever heard. And I watched it and I resolved to, I'm like, okay, I'm going to download TikTok because when they do one of these again, I'm going to submit at least a couple things for it. So Bridgerton musical, here I come.
Bridgerton is the current.
Yeah. I'll have to watch that show and then write some stuff.
Kimberly watched it with you again. She watched it.
I watched it twice.
I would love that.
It's fun.
It was truly a very fascinating conversation. Kimberly had a couple weeks off from work and
I watched Bridgerton.
She watched Bridgerton and I was working my butt off and I came home and she was like, is it weird that I want to just start Bridgerton over again? And I went, live your truth, baby. I was like, I'm playing a game, whatever. I was like, I got my Switch. I'm chilling. Like, you can watch whatever you want. Just started it again and then watched it again.
Well, there's a twist at the end. So I wanted to watch the whole series knowing the twist.
So sorry to cut you off, but I was like, oh, Ratatouille. I'm pumped about Ratatouille.
There might be a life for your show on TikTok, Alex.
Yeah.
Okay.
Find I plan to make that work. TikTok. Find Mel Gibson TikTok. Find musical TikTok. Put them together.
Yeah, we're basically across.
Although be careful finding Patriot TikTok. Make sure you mean the movie.
Yes. And while we're at it, Mel Gibson could be dicey territory as well.
Yeah.
Into
parlor.
Let's just start with musical TikTok.
Yeah.
Yes,
that's hilarious.
Oh no, you should go to the TikTok of what's it called when you reenactment TikTok.
Oh, because
there are girls on TikTok that are like how you would get dressed in 1776.
Oh, why am I not watching that right now? That sounds like my jam.
It's wonderful.
I love stuff like that.
And just like a lot of during Bridgerton, before the musical stuff started, it was a lot of like, this is what would have been period appropriate clothing. They weren't wearing corsets. They were wearing stays and like correcting everyone's period assumptions. It was fun.
I want it all.
Made me almost buy a $500 outfit for a Renaissance fair.
If I had the money, you'd already own it. If we were wealthy, you could, you know, that's totally something I would be like, yeah, get it, girl. I was like, living truth.
I'd love to just be like, what did you do on your day off? Well, I lived the life of a Regency era gentlewoman.
I studied my Latin in the morning, my ancient Greek in the afternoon, and I wept at night.
All to candlelight.
Yeah. Like, did we buy a harpsichord? Why is there a harpsichord in the lobby?
It's a pianoforte.
I'm sorry.
It's new.
You do not interrupt mother's lessons.
I burn. Okay.
What are we even talking about?
Worlds.
I really haven't at all.
Shall we word of the week?
Word of the week?
Star of the week?
Star of the week?
My girl, Sutton Foster.
Hell yeah.
Ooh, good call.
Because Alex, do you know her backstory? She rose to the fame.
I know that she is Hunter Foster's brother. I know she was in Shrek. And I know that didn't someone break their leg and she replaced them in Thoroughly Modern Millie and she won a Tony?
Yes.
Is that something like that?
I don't know. I always heard that, yes, Erin Dilly hurt herself and had to leave. But looking into it today in preparation, it just said that there was differences of opinions between the creative team and a mutually agreed upon decision for her to leave the show.
Okay. And I'd imagine this, like, they had to put her down like a horse. It was really sad.
But the all of the, like, rumor mill stuff that I heard as a child when this happened was that Erin Dilly hurt herself, Sutton went on, and the producers went fire the other girl.
Okay. So it was a slow motion thing I described.
Yeah. I don't know if that's really the order of events. Or they just Erin quit for some reason, and they only had 7 days until the show, and Sutton was her understudy, so she did it.
I've heard a far more romanticized version of the story, in that, like, she was out, and, like, and Sutton really didn't know a lot of the stuff, and, like, learned it very quickly, and, like, kind of just, like, brought, like, this new spark to it, that they were just, like, well, it's like she kept doing it because what's her name was
still out. Hurt, yeah.
But it was like she impacted, she was so good in the role that they just were like, that she's it now. I don't know what to tell
you. Yeah, I heard someone do it. Like, she was out and she was on for her for multiple performances, and the producers were just like, she can't come back.
The interesting thing is about Sutton Foster, she's truly incredible. But do we think, and one of the things that I think leads to her being so incredible is that she's a very unique person.
Yeah.
And the kind of unique that, like, if she wasn't given, like, that kind of
crazy chance,
crazy rise to fame, do you think she's, like, she becomes
Sutton Foster?
Sutton Foster.
I thought about it in my listenings of Drowsy Chaperone this week, because this was sort of the big follow-up. So she did Thoroughly Modern Millie. She did Little Women, which famously did not last very long, but she won a Tony for Millie, then went into Little Women, didn't do well. She received good reviews, I'm sure, because
Little
Women
was
crazy.
She sings the hell out of that song.
She was astonishing.
Yeah, it's an amazing song.
Alex has a pun because there's a song she sings called Astonishing.
I figured.
That show did not do well. I had tickets, but it closed before I could see it. And then she did Drowsy, which got her rave reviews and was a delight. So no, I don't know that she would have, like, had the same trajectory, but I think something would have happened.
Yeah, she probably would still be working. It just maybe would have gone a different way, or taken longer or something.
Yeah, because she was still Millie's understudy. She would have gone on eventually.
That's fair. That makes sense.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I actually saw her in Thoroughly Modern Millie. I saw the original cast.
And?
She was legitimately, it's still to this day one of the best things I've ever seen. It was incredible.
Yeah.
It's like, when I hear that story, that's why I, like, kind of believe that story. Because I was like, yeah, she was everything in that show. She danced her face off. She sang her brains out. And the most important part of that whole thing, for me at least, was that she was hilarious. She was so funny in that show. And she brings a level of humor to everything she does.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, like, and that's why I think she's stuck around, is that, like, she's so talented, but, like, it remains so approachable as a star.
Yeah, because she plays these ingenue roles in a weird, quirky best friend kind of way. It's like the best friend got to be on the show.
Yeah,
it's like a character actor when they star in a movie.
Yeah. But she doesn't feel like she's faking it. It doesn't feel like it's put on, you know? Because sometimes you see that and you're like, ah.
Yeah.
Like, they're nudging the audience, and this is like, no, Sutton's just inherently very funny.
Yeah.
And she's got very good timing.
It's also the biggest argument I've ever gotten into with Kevin Jaeger.
Oh, we don't talk about
Seth Bosch. He and I got into a, at Surflight back in the day, got into a full-on knockdown argument about like the ability of Sutton Foster.
Yeah, he still does not think he's talented.
He caught me like four beers in. So that's you know what I mean?
Let them fight.
It was a little bit of a dog with a bone situation. But
I was like, please imagine like what other people fight about in their early 20s. Like, well, I got in this bar fight because like this guy was like treating a girl weird, and it's like I got in a bar fight with my best friend because he said Sutton Foster sucked.
Yeah.
But that is what happened.
So, like, that is it's categorically false. It is incorrect.
It's just false. Yeah.
I'm starting to get mad just even thinking about it.
I know. I really don't like to think about it.
You're just wrong. You're wrong.
This hits on something I've actually kind of wanted to bring up to you guys, which is I love.
No,
I do. It's not about her. It's a wider issue.
Okay.
So it bothers me when if I ask like theater people are great. They really are, but they throw around the word terrible a bit much to the point where I feel like they're doing it for attention once in a while, because I've talked to someone where I'm like, oh, how was that show? And they're like, oh, it was great. The star was terrible though. And I'm like, I've seen big shows where I didn't think the star was that good, and it doesn't ruin the show, but it almost makes me go, am I having fun? I don't buy if someone's like, it was so good, but the star was terrible. I'm like, were they? Because you seem pretty pumped about the show.
Yeah.
I feel like there's no middle ground and there's no middle sliders on what people want to label as terrible sometimes.
I would say the same in
it really bothers me.
Direction too, though. Theater people love the extreme emotional reaction to something. So if they really like to show me, like, it was the best thing I've ever seen. I loved it so much.
Yeah. So
moving.
Yeah, but also my mother very much at one point put it best when we had seen something, and I think it was she saw something with me and Brian, and we were kind of ripping it to bits a little bit. Mm-hmm. And my mom finally was just like, she's like, I had fun. She was like, I think you guys need to remember that, like, not really everyone cares as much as you guys do. And like, she was like,
need to prove it.
She was like, I appreciate that you guys are like very thoughtful in what you see. And she was like, I'm jealous of that. But also, like, I think you guys are sometimes forgetting to just kind of, and this is escapism for a lot of people. And you can just kind of like, some people want to just turn their brain off and enjoy something. And like, that's okay. And I was like, oh yeah, yeah. We're a little jaded.
What show was that, do you think?
I don't even remember. It was a long time ago. But it's partially why I enjoyed Hands on a Hard Body so much, because I saw it with my mother. And I was like, I'm going to take a page from my mother's book and I'm just going to like choose to have a good time. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I actually really liked the show, but like, my mom is a very positive force in that regard. And I like that about her.
She likes them. She's like, that was good.
She's like, that was good. I'm like, yeah, but this, she's like, yeah, it was fine. It was good. Can it just be good? Yeah, but then it was like when we saw Come From Away with her, and I was like, that is maybe one of the like tightest things I've ever seen in my life. And she was like, yes. She was like, I understand. She's like, I understand kind of what you're getting at now. Cause she was like, cause that was unquestionably very good.
Yeah.
Like, she was like, I have no notes. I was like, neither do I. She was like, that's rare. And I was like, I'm aware. Yeah, I know.
The show's perfect.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's the tightest 90 minutes of theater I think I've ever seen.
Ever.
Like, it wastes no time.
I know.
It's incredible.
Oh, so good. Sutton Foster.
Sutton Foster. I'm sorry. Tangent of the Lifetime.
Who we love, but yes, Millie did catapult her career in a way that had that one show not happened, it wouldn't have happened. But to quote myself sometimes, but it did happen. So why talk about it if it didn't?
Yeah.
That way, man.
She is famous. She is the star of a perpetually on hold Music Man revival with Hugh Jackman.
It's Schrodinger's Music Man.
It's just maybe one day we're all allowed again.
I hate that. I really want to see that.
Me too.
Who doesn't want to see that? Like, sorry, I'm
Kevin.
I do. Well, then all three of us are going, and we're not inviting Kevin.
No, but we'll invite our moms.
Is it weird though? I'd rather see Sutton Foster as Harold Hill. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because I was like, oh, I'm more excited to see Sutton. I'm like, yeah, but her part sucks. I was like,
yeah. And she'll do like her Sutton thing of making it quirkier than it has ever been, which is fun. But she also can be so lovely, like Violet. is not a funny role.
Alex, have you even touched on that show yet?
I listened to the first couple tracks and I enjoyed it.
That's kind of a, I think that one, at least for me, Violet's the kind of show where you like pop a bottle of wine and kind of just like go through it.
Yeah.
I was just listening to it in passing because we talked about maybe doing it. So I know I'll like it when I sit down and do it all the way because it's Ginny Tesori.
Yeah.
So
I had the pleasure of watching Jay watch Violet because I got Rush tickets and then he got jealous. So I went back and got him a Rush ticket.
So
I sat in the middle of the mezzanine and Jay was in a box. And so I had bullseye view.
Oh, yeah,
you basically watched a previewed episode of me watching Violet.
It was the original reaction video, yeah. But in real time. And you just were a hot, blubbery mess that whole show.
She was incredible. And Joshua Henry gave, yeah.
I love him.
Like, wow. Like, what a truly... I still think the house is too big for that show, but whatever.
Yeah, but they filled it.
Yeah, I just want that really intimate. I want that really small. Not okay. Moving on.
Moving on. We love Sutton Foster. She is in the show we are talking about this week, The Drowsy Chaperone from 2006. Does anyone have a personal history with this program?
I didn't get to see this on Broadway. Mm-hmm. The first time I ever saw a production of this was when I went to go see Brian was... playing one of the Tall Brothers, one of the two
pastry chef
gangsters.
They cross their hot that pastry chef
at merry-go-round, which also starred a friend of the show, friend of the family, Danny Gardner played George in that production, and he was
the best
also
man, George.
He was, and the tap number was like. You know, it was Danny, so it was incredible. It was just amazing.
Yeah. Everyone should follow Danny Gardner on Instagram for his tap skills.
But it's still to this day one of the best like regional productions of if you are in upstate New York and you have not been to the merry-go-round, go. They do good things there. It was a very excellent. But I missed this on Broadway. But listening through it again today, I was like, I was texting Kimberly and I was like, this is one of my regrets. I wish I had seen the original cast of this like hard.
Yeah. In my mind, I did, but I'm actually 95% certain I saw Mara Davey, who replaced Sutton. But I think everyone else was still there.
Okay.
Also, we were sitting five people away from Barbara Walters.
Huh.
Which was a fun little thing. It was, I think, one of the first shows I saw at the Marriott Marquis Theater,
mm-hmm.
which is a comfortable place to see a show. Highly recommend. Cozy seats, leg room.
Are you being sarcastic?
No.
Oh. I was like, yeah, it is amazing. I thought you were being smart.
I love that theater.
I was like, that might be my favorite Broadway house.
I love being there so much. Every time I think of shows, I'm like, oh yeah, 9 to 5 was great. Comfortable.
Oh yeah. It was the best part of Tootsie, really.
Margaritaville was great. Cozy with a frozen marg. their frozen drinks are only $12. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I saw it in 2006, 2007-ish. I think I was still in high school. I have a signed poster in this apartment somewhere and a signed playbill, I believe, as well.
Cool.
From, I remember meeting the pastry chefs and maybe Danny Burstein.
Oh.
Perhaps. Unclear. In my memory of being an 18-year-old theater kid.
Alex, did you have a history with this show at all?
No, I had heard the name before just from us doing this show. And I had in my mind what I thought it was it was like a, I kind of thought it was the show that it's sort of poking fun at. I assumed it was older and I thought it was a man in a chair just watching a party unfold, which in a way it is, but I didn't realize it was I didn't know the lens through which the show was at. So pretty much none. Yeah.
I also am remembering my main thing with this show, why I really know all the lyrics. I was like, I did listen to this a lot, but I have retained a lot of this lyric. It was one of the shows that they did at Surflight Theater the summer that we met. And my crew duty for that show was spotlight operator.
Your crewdy?
My crewdy was spot op. And so I have seen the Surflight Theater production of Drowsy Chaperone 24 times.
Ooh, I thought they did that summer. I don't think I saw it.
It was good. I mean, I saw it 24 times. I could have been brainwashed into thinking it was good.
Yeah, it's a good show.
It's a great show, and it's kind of a small cast, so you can really regionally like find good actors. And
well, and the great. And the whole point of the show is that like the actual show that Man and Chair is like listening to and kind of like showing the audience is like kind of a little flawed.
Yeah.
And it's like, if it's not perfect up there, it's actually like part of the charm.
Mm-hmm. And it's an old show, and it's a lot, there's so much humor in just the ridiculous things they're saying.
Yeah.
It's just like, what a bad show it was. But they're, it's also must be such a weird thing as an actor to be playing the actor that's playing the character, because he's also giving the backstory.
Yeah.
Of fake actors that are playing these parts. The Oops Girl.
Try not to think about the poodles.
I mean, let's be real. If we're getting into it, this show, I forgot how funny this show is. Damn, this show. Just from the album, this show is funny.
Yeah.
Like, not just musical funny. Like, the stuff that he is, like, just, like, hitting off the dome. Like, the cocaine and the toothpaste.
That's a good idea.
Man, there's some good bits.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that's not all of them. He talks a lot more, obviously, than he does on the album.
Yeah.
They released a actual album with more of his dialogue so that it felt like you were really listening to.
Okay.
I'd buy that.
I know, I want it. I saw that today and I was like, I need to buy it for a record player.
Yeah.
Yes. Alex, when you were listening through, did you look at the musical number list anywhere else? Because that song at the end, that little bonus track.
I just went through the album on Spotify and then watched a bootleg online.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
So you saw the opening of Act 2.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
What a good bit.
A good bit, yeah.
Like, honestly, I really had a really great time re-listening through this show. Because
mm-hmm.
we were like, oh, we're doing Drowsy. I was like, okay, sure. And then I was listening through and I was like, oh yeah, this is a really, really good show.
Yeah.
But also, what I didn't realize I was going to take away from it, how prescient is just like a man going through his record collection. Just because he's like, oh, I just like caught a bit of the sads. You know, and I just kind of like, I like listening to my music. And like, he's very clearly an agoraphobe and he's in his apartment and it's very clear he hasn't left in a while. And I was like, yo, this is very prescient for like where we've all been lately in a way that I
teared up during the first number when he's like, all right, imagine it's 1921, it's winter, you're going up to the whatever fake theater he brings up. And I was like, I want to go to a theater.
Yeah.
I loved it very much. Alex, what were your thoughts?
I didn't like it as much as I wanted to.
I was gonna say you look down.
Yeah, I thought that it had a handful of really great jokes, mostly from Man and Chair, that I will go through in my little loves. I didn't really love any of the songs. I didn't hate them either, but none of them really like wowed me. And the problem I have with it, I really love the lens through which we watch him watch it.
Yeah.
But what the problem I have is that part of the lens of that is that he intersperses some of his life so that you start to learn why this show resonates with him, and it becomes a character study of Man and Chair a little bit.
Yeah.
I would have been more interested if that started earlier, so that every number or at least every few numbers would be through the lens of, okay, why is this resonating so much with him? Because The Drowsy Chaperone, the show within the show, I think is fine. And because he doesn't talk a lot in Act 1, now I'm just watching a show that's kind of not that interesting. And so it lost me right away and got me back a bit toward the end, but not enough for me to have like a great time. So, but I love Man and Chair. Love him.
He's so good. He also wrote it.
Yes. And the Book of the Prom.
Yeah. He is wonderful. I'm sorry you didn't like it as much.
That's okay.
Because I love the songs. I will raise you a monkey on a pedestal all day, every day.
I like that. I think it's fine. It's a good song. There's no terrible songs in here. I just didn't blow my skirt up. That's all.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I think for me, Monkey on a Pedestal is on from a meta perspective, like I think the most intriguing kind of like joke or bit or concept of the show, when he's like, hey, like this song is actually really beautiful, the lyrics are trash, so like pay attention to how pretty this song is, but like no, it's gonna be bad. So it's like, oh cool, they're setting up a good bit for the lyrics just really being bad.
Yeah,
and but like because... it's a beautiful song, and he's just like, oh, I've listened to this so many times, like this song brings me comfort even though it's not that good.
And then
because he says don't listen to lyrics, oh guess what, I can't not do now. It's like it's a really good trick to make you really like zone in on them. It's
on how terrible they are. Also, how fun must it have been to just have terrible lyrics to write?
Yeah, probably harder than writing good lyrics.
Oh, I bet.
Fully agree.
Writing bad lyrics well.
Yes. It's like if you're a musician, you try to play something off rhythm, it doesn't compute.
Yeah. But hard. I do think like that like sums up a lot of like fandom in this community, I think sometimes, is that like, look, it's really hard to write a perfect musical.
Yeah.
It's really hard to like nail this kind of thing at all moments, at all times. And like everyone has those couple of shows that they like can fully admit that they aren't perfect.
Yeah.
But like you still like this, you still like those parts of it.
Yeah.
Because it's a part of it.
Yeah.
And yeah.
You love it because of its flaws even more. Because they become endearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
It's also just very much like, I mean, Alex, from us at this point in your life, but also like every theater kid has like been on both sides of being man and chair. Like you've had to sit down and like listen through an album with your friend while they tell you why they like it so much.
Yes.
You've also been the person that's like, I'm going to show you this play. This one's not that great, so don't give it that much. Like, I know it's not good. I'm aware that it's not the best.
Yeah.
But do you like it? Okay, give me two.
At this point in the podcast, I have actually played both those roles. Just not a lot, but I have gotten there.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But like just an old school like listening party with your friends while you're like, this is a show that I kind of discovered and no one else really listens to it. And so do I show it to someone or is this my special secret cast album?
Yeah. Guys, did you know Shrek the Musical is good?
Yeah. There was a show that had a studio cast recording. And I lost my entire iTunes library right after college. Like my computer crashed and it was all gone. But I had like things I had taken out of the library, like things I had taken out of the performing arts library. I had all of these crazy old CDs that I think I had thrown out. And so I'm trying to remember, it was My Drowsy Chaperone. It was kind of a dumb 20s show that they did a studio cast recording of. And it was called, I'm going to think of it at some point. But I just remember being like, this show's kind of dumb. Why did they do this?
Why did I like this? And then by the end, you're shocked. Sure,
I never let anyone listen to it with me. Someone would like come in my car and it was on and I'd be like, I'm also listening to A Chorus Line. Like, it's fine.
High button shoes, pal Joey.
Exactly. I also do want to highlight the chaperone herself.
Yeah.
Of the prom, of the love of our lives, Beth Level. She was almost my star of the week, but then Sutton's the actual star of this show.
Yeah.
Did we like revisiting Beth Level after thinking about the prom?
I liked it more. I mean, and I kind of forgot that that was her. And I was like, but it hit me like right as she started singing. A, she has probably the best song in the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a reason they reprised that at the end and that's what everyone sings with him. Like, it's the best song in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it just like, if anything, loving her from the prom has only made me like this show more.
Yeah, she's great. And I didn't know I had no idea who was in this show because I just went into the album cold and I just... picked her out of me like, oh, Beth Level, of course, she became, went on with the prom. Okay, yeah, I was really happy to hear her. And Sublong is a good song.
Yeah, Alex, I feel like I'm on the, I understand your disappointment when I didn't like Hairspray as much as you did a couple weeks ago.
I thought I was on the, because I said Hairspray was very good or kind of.
Well, you were like, oh, Good Morning Baltimore makes me cry. And I'm like, oh, it's fine. It's fine.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Like, yeah, a little bit. Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. This show is also a study in some people like some shows.
Yeah, I think so.
Some people don't like some shows.
I listened through again this morning, and like at the finale when they all start singing with him, and I think it's just more that it's just a more sign of the timesy, but like, it like really got me. I was like kind of crying.
Yeah, the act two, I feel, gets stronger than act one because you get more of those man and Cher's life kind of bleeding into the show and why. And he's just to basically tell you overshare about why he loves the show and about his marriage and stuff. And then so when he becomes part of it, it actually is pretty cool.
And see, I forgot about that part of the show, and I don't need that part of the show. I love just him being like, these lyrics are terrible, or like, listen, and just like, just him enjoying and being snarky listening to a show. Obviously, the like adding a personal element to it makes it a better show as a whole.
Yeah. And I know this is a point that I've been bringing up in the past couple episodes, but I think this one also falls into the same category of musicals. You could, I think, very feasibly and be welcomed well writing a sequel to.
Yeah.
If you had
just he's showing you a different show.
Just have him back showing a different show.
I believe at the Tonys that year, he did a whole bit showing, was he in the opening number? There's a bit with Manning Cher at that year's Tonys.
Oh yeah, I mean.
Which I'm sure, or I think they just rewrote his monologue into the, they did show off at the Tonys.
They should have just written the host to be Manning Cher for the Tonys that year is what they should have done.
Yeah, oh, that would be so good. Cause right. He would be really, he's almost like a really endearing snob a little bit. It's really interesting. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He throws around the word terrible a lot. I'm sure.
Theater people. Like definition, Webster's dictionary. Endearing snob.
Now, what do we think he thinks of Sutton Foster? What do we think he thinks of Sutton Foster? I think he'd be a fan because she's so earnestly kind of endearing. I think that would be infectious to him.
Oh yeah. Plus he loves the Oops Girl.
Yeah.
There's also something of just like, I see myself and my friends in him from the very beginning. That maybe is why I didn't need it. Not need it in the second act, but I was already connected to him because him just like interrupting with little tidbits about the actors is how I listen to music.
Yeah. Him, just his existence. We were already on board.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I know who you are immediately.
Yeah,
I've met you. We've all met that guy, and we've all at moments been that guy, especially now. I did like him as just sort of the charming host, but I liked it even more when you find out that he's wrestling with a lot of sadness.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, Alex. I know you already bought a whole Hamilton outfit, but if we were to ever go to a Broadway themed costume party, I think if you showed up as man and chair, you would murder. Like you would be costume of the night.
I would love that because I did have the thought when I was watching this. I was like, I think I could age into Man and Cher.
Yes. Yeah. It is an Alex Acella type.
Yeah, because, and well, I'll get to in my specific little loves about him, how he does some things that I would do now.
Yes.
We'll get to that later.
I guess that's why kind of why I'm so surprised you weren't like completely in love with it. Well, I thought this was a home run for you.
Yeah, well, like I said, the character is a home run for me. It's the fact that just to establish, I don't love the music and I don't love, and I know that it's on purpose kind of a bad show within the show, but now I'm just watching a show that's kind of not that interesting and it just knocked me out of it.
Yeah.
Which is where I said that like, if it was more like act two where you find out reasons why, oh, why does this, you know, show off song resonate with it. We started to learn more about him so that every song that you would always have that in your mind of like, why is the sad guy so into this album that's kind of ditzy and sort of fluffy? It would have added more of substance, I think, for me. But I love that character. And The fact that he's an agoraphobe who wears a bow tie is such a strong choice, because that means he sees no one, but he still does that every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. I will posit this, because I thought of it today, that where is the digital production of Drowsy Chaperone?
Okay.
This quarantined age.
Yeah.
It's the most quarantined show.
Absolutely.
Everyone right now is man in chair listening to musicals and imagining them coming to life. It doesn't even need to be Drowsy Chaperone. You just rent Bob Martin a really good apartment and like get people to do musical numbers in front of him.
Well, and the funny thing is that, like, you know, like a peek behind the curtain, we've been like trying to, like, in the early parts of this, when we were like trying to get the show back off the ground, like, well, what shows would be like prescient for like what we're going through right now? And we really didn't nail it. And then we just kind of stumbled into this. And I was like, this is the show. I was like, this is the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For instance, it took quarantine for you and I to love Waitress.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but that Waitress cast album has gotten us through some cleaning afternoons.
Yeah, it really has. Like,
and we know that all the songs aren't good. And that sometimes part of the production was a little weird.
But
that's just shows.
Yeah.
And the fact that they do it in his living room, that it becomes like his fridge, like characters come out of it, I think is so, it's not only cool visually, there's a sadness about it, because it's all, you know, at the end of the day, all of this is in his imagination and he's alone, shut in. And it's almost like you feel that it's sad before you know why it's sad. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, that's true. And like more and more of his apartment goes away, but then every time some of his apartment comes back.
Yes.
It's and just, then oh yeah, you're right. We all got lost there for a minute.
Yeah, and I don't know if this was just the production that I watched on YouTube, but there was a scene in one in his apartment.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of fun.
Absolutely. Did you watch was it the original cast on YouTube?
No, it was some regional production that was just sort of okay. The guy who was man in chair messed up some of his lines.
Oh, well, perhaps that's why you didn't like it, Alex. It was a lackluster production.
I'm not saying it wasn't, but I also listened to the album.
Okay.
The Broadway.
Well, now I'm going to send you other videos.
I'd be happy to watch.
You watched the Tony performance?
I didn't even know there was one.
Oh, there's always a Tony performance. They won Best Score and Best Book. And Beth Level won Best Featured Actress.
Okay, that's earned.
It won Best Scenic and Best Costume.
Yeah, this is some Broadway baby growing pains. This is like, you know, you raise your children and then like you expect them to just be just like you, and then they start having opinions.
I know. I think I want like approvals over what versions you watch.
I am so neurotic.
I think you just said which one you watched.
I am so neurotic. I've processed the thought of like, if I want more material, should I ask for a pre-approved list? Like, yeah. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah. Ask for a list and I will send it to you.
Yes, yes.
I will send you what I think is the best representation.
But also live your truth, Alex. I mean, like, we're not, you know, we're here to guide you. We're not here to, like, make you a carbon copy.
Yeah, and, like, regional theater is a valid and wonderful thing.
Yeah, what I ended up doing is I was trying to find...
Was it theater?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know where... Yeah, I don't know where this one was. I just Googled Drowsy Chaperone whole show, hoping to find the Broadway one. And then I started this one. And then I found later there was an original Broadway one. I'm like, I'm already halfway through this one.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, I do like the idea that once in a while I watch a regional production of a show. Like I watched a regional Urinetown, which I didn't think was very good, but it just showed me what the material looks like in hands that aren't the Broadway hands. And there's an interesting quality to that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But I would definitely watch the Broadway one of those and see how I feel.
Yeah. I also think Drowsy does really well regionally. I think I already said that.
You did.
But I agree with myself from earlier. Shall we say Little Loves?
Yeah.
Yes.
Jay Bird?
Oh, yeah, I'll go first. A lot of it is just line reads from the album are just
yeah, those are mine too. So I'm what's going on with nothing left.
in the very opening when the Drowsy Chaperone shows up and just one of the guys just goes, "But madam, it's prohibition." it just really tickled me. The cocaine toothpaste line, he's like, "Oh, it was the fourth ingredient down and right after sugar." I was like, that's such a good joke. It's just
So good.
The jokes in the show are like croissants. They just like, it's all about the layers. Mm-hmm. I think the one lyric I took away from this show, and I know, and I maybe looked into it and thought it was deeper than it should be, but I'm leaning into it. It's from Stumble Along, and it's keep your eyeball on the highball in your hand.
That's my favorite line of the whole show.
Good line.
In that, I think it's my new stay in the moment mantra.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? It's just
drink through the pain.
Yeah,
focus on this drink, not the next.
Yeah,
drink.
I think it gets a little murky in the substance abuse aspect.
How does he like bring that song up? It's a rousing anthem to alcoholism.
Yeah.
Is what he says. Yeah.
I think the quote unquote act two opening when he puts the wrong record in is like the perfect way to, it's like almost a hack joke, but it's not. You know what I mean? Because we've all been there where you had the wrong record in the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, this is perfect. And it's also, it's like, oh man, yeah, some, and it also like, it really brings to the forward. It's like, yeah, some of these old musicals are racist. Wow. Oh no.
I have found the album I was talking about earlier.
Oh, cool.
That was my drowsy chaperone. It's called Kitty's Kisses.
Excellent.
Yep.
I already talked about that. No, I think those are my little loves. That's all I got. Everything else I've talked about.
Monkey on a Pedestal is my main big love. Is it the monkey or the pedestal? I love. Makes me laugh every single time. Also, it's a fun song to sing. And then, I think it's in that song. Oh, yeah. Who are you? I'm Janet Vandegraaff. Do you need anyone? I don't need anyone. And it just very like Rocky Horror callback to the audience. And I just kept thinking about how fun that was to write. Like to write dialogue that made sense to be a monologue, but also made sense as a conversation in his mind.
Yeah, because you can tell he's listened to this so much that he's just started to add his own calls and responses, which is great.
Exactly, because people do that.
Yeah.
What else do I love? I love everyone's introductions. Like, I love the opening number where they're just like, this is this person, because that doesn't happen in musicals anymore. But it's just like so.
Yeah, unless it's Great Comet, they just have so many characters that they have to do that.
That's true. And here's a list.
Yeah, you know, here's, honestly, just read the book before you come.
Just this chapter.
Yeah.
I just love it. I love George, the character of George. He's funny. They're all funny. Like the random roller skating. Also the setup of she's the oops girl. She made people have accidents and then accident waiting to happen. Because just like the joke of like, she was famous for causing accidents and then she was in this show. So they wrote her a song called Accident Waiting to Happen.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. I love that. Just a little nugget of them also in the mindset of like, well, we cast this girl in 1921 and she's the oops girl and she makes accidents happen. Like, it's very much like how musical comedies before they were book musicals of what we know today happened. They cast a star and they wrote them a song that was kind of the character, but mostly them.
Yeah, and I think also this also harkens back to what we've discussed of how Broadway was pop music. All of these are singles in their own way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they're written more for the actor than they are for the character.
Yes, her rousing anthems by the time she was 88, more stupefied than roused, but
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, it's just like so many layers of comedy. And I love it so much. And then at the end, when he talks about that he knows it's not perfect, and then one by one they all come on and there they are, and you know, maybe he goes to the light. I don't know, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm kidding. Yeah.
It is an interest, just on the ending, it is an interesting thought of like, there. It's a lot to think about, and like, okay, he has this to make him feel better. But also, when that album is shut off, he's going to go back to being in the same place. So there's almost kind of a tragedy within the triumph, because it's this big look, now he's part of the album, but then it's like, that thing's gonna shut off and he's gonna hear static and he's gonna like cry or something, and it's gonna be
and in the production, like, it all fades out and he's in his apartment alone, and it is
which is heartbreaking.
And then you almost back without the record being on, so has his delusion taken over, or are they really there?
And then you does make you kind of wonder, is his delving into these fantasies actually harming his ability to get better emotionally? And it's there's an interesting tension there, I think.
Yeah.
Two of my loves were Jay's loves, and I don't care, I'm gonna say them anyway. Big Love, and then has many loves within it, is Man in Chair. I think he's a great character. I think there's a lot of layers to what is essentially a framing device, becomes a lot more interesting as he starts to have a few drinks and start to tell you about that he had a failed marriage. And I think it's implied that it was because he's not attracted to women, but married a woman anyway. And like, you get some of that stuff. My favorite joke, the cocaine joke, is amazing. My favorite one is when he's introducing the, I think it was the drowsy chaperone. And it was the forgetful woman and the butler. And it kind of freezes and he goes, they were a real life vaudeville doer that were lost to time, so-and-so and Ukulele Lil. I tried to find out what she was known for, but I Googled it and all I found were Tiny Tim's autopsy photographs. That's a great joke. I love it so much. It's a deep, deep cut.
It's insane.
That's the most deep cut I've ever heard. My second little love is the wildly offensive King and I parody that opens Act Two. It's and the fact that it's specifically like a little bit of a dig at the King and I, like, hey, this is this Orientalism that we still kind of love in theater. We got to talk about it. And that he comes running back. He's like, oh, no, not that one.
Yeah, but the whole song is on the album. But yes. They only do like a minute or so.
And then Stumble Along. Very good song.
Yeah. Beth Level. She's got anthems.
Yeah.
Also, I'm now realizing that, like, they did it again. Like, Bob Martin did it again. He wrote a show within a show.
Yeah.
And he wrote an amazing anthem from a fake show. And then he did it again in the prom.
Yeah.
With The Ladies Improving. A great anthem for Beth Level from a fake show. She did it twice.
And it's interesting that he's done two Meta-Broadway shows and one resonated with me more than the other one. But, like, if The Prom is the follow-up, I'm like, oh, I'm very into seeing what else he's done, because it's those handful of jokes that I love.
He's so funny.
Yeah.
What does Harold do? Or do you have more?
No, that was it.
What does Harold do in this show? I think he's like, ah, yes, the shows of my youth.
Yeah.
Is there a chance that he does some man and sharing when he's not allowed out in public?
It's possible.
Yeah. And does his phone ring the whole time instead of commentary?
And he's not anywhere near as funny. It's all like, ah, Agnes dragged me to this show. It was
this
okay.
One song was good.
Yeah.
If that becomes part of his family's entertainment when they've been in quarantine too long, is they just put on albums next to grandpa and just watch him comment, no matter if he likes it or not. They just want to hear him keep talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think my phone went off when she had the baby, and they sang about pie, I think. There was a pie. The baby was a pie. I don't know.
And they just start a TikTok account of just them asking him what musicals are about.
Oh, that'd be great.
Grandpa, what was Beautiful about? Oh, this girl with a ponytail.
Yeah.
Had long hair at the end.
Yeah, baby turned into a pie and then they threw it from a train. I don't remember.
We saw Bright Star and Waitress on the same day.
They bleed together.
Oh, wonderful. Is there a review?
Got a review. Before I start this, Jay, are you ready with your chunk?
Jay,
are you ready with your chunk of the outro so it can
What a surprise for me?
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is from Denos R. 5 stars. Please leave Broadway Baby 5 stars and a nice review on iTunes. It really helps our numbers. And at this point, we've been doing the show for 2 years. We need momentum. We have a little bit, but we want to keep going. It says, so great. Love. This is such a unique concept. I love it. Adding more theater nerds to this world, one at a time. Thank you, Denos.
Yeah. Theater people. What did we call them? Endearing snobs.
Endearing snobs.
Yes.
That's the new name of this podcast.
Yeah.
The spinoff.
One snob at a time.
Yeah.
All right. So Sing out, Louise's.
The next song was by Alex Fuseli. You remember him, the Broadway baby, you know? Known for his Sing Out Louise's that just went on and on. I mean, I think by the time the show was over, he'd do with like the whole finale of the second act. The show could be 5 minutes long. He'd write a 7 minute song somehow. Mostly just made of puns that he stole from TikTok. He went on to write the Patriot musical, Lethal Weapon the musical, and Road Warrior, a samba extravaganza. Little fella built a whole career on musically trolling Mel Gibson.
I don't wanna sing out no more. Belt a chorus and shout no more. Wow the digital crowd no more. I don't wanna sing out. I don't wanna podcast no more. Keep regretting my past no more. Put the haters on blast no more. I don't wanna sing out. Don't nobody at me because I am done. I don't cry. Bye bye to Broadway's prodigal son. I don't want the marquee no more. Make it all about me no more. Be the Broadway baby no more. I don't wanna sing out no more.
Fun fact, he actually died of gout 3 days after recording this song. What a way to go.
Ha ha ha!